and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Folks, we have Alex Smalley and Maverick McNealy who are tied for the lead heading into the weekend here at the PGA Championship. But Rex, I think the biggest takeaway for me through 36 holes is how Aronimink has stood up. I think you and I both predicted that the winning score was eventually going to be 16 under par. It seems very unlikely that we get to it at this point. Do you think that it's the product of us not knowing what we're talking about, the golf course playing a little bit tougher than we expected, or do you think this is really in the hands of the PGA setup crew with Kerry Hagan Company, who wanted to put their fingerprints all over this championship?
Yes, to all of them.
Yes.
I think, no,
yes.
We don't know what we were talking about, because you look at, and it's the royal we. I don't even think it's all the media. Certainly the media jumped on the idea that this was not going to be the stern test that maybe we anticipated it was going to be, but so did the players. I mean, it was Rory McIlroy who described it as just stand on the tee and hit driver. You didn't have to think about anything. Clearly that's not the case either, but I think probably Kerry Hagan and the PGA of America paid attention to those comments. And I was just talking with Jamie Mulligan, who's the swing coach for Patrick Cantlay, as they were coming off the golf course. And he was kind of went through the card of sort of what he called dicey pins, and not unfair pins, don't get me wrong here, but pins that are cut right on edges. And he almost went 1 through 18, because all of them seem to be cut in really difficult positions. And I don't think we anticipated A, the wind straight, and B, it was going to be so cold.
Yeah, look, I think a couple of things are true at this point. Driving accuracy is very unimportant. That is exactly what we expected heading into the golf tournament through 36 holes. That bears out with the statistics that we've seen. The players who are atop the leaderboard at this point have been the ones who have been pouring in putts. We know that Aronimink's greatest defense are its greens. But I really think, Rex, the way that this golf course has been set up, and you mentioned some of the dicey pins. Scottie Scheffler, who shot one over par on Friday's second round, called them, quote, kind of absurd, and said they were the toughest pins that he has ever seen on the PGA Tour since he turned pro, even more difficult than the ones in the major championships. It's going to be sort of the lead story for the Live From newsletter with Rex and Lav. And yes, that is a plug. You can go to golfchannel.com/Rex and Lav to sign up for that newsletter. We will be posting one on Saturday morning. The biggest takeaway for me, though, among that, though, Rex, is when you look at the pin locations. In the opening round, you had 10 hole locations that were cut 6 or fewer paces from the edge of the green. On Friday, you had 9 of those hole locations that were cut 6 or fewer paces for the green. These aren't just tucked hole locations. These aren't just placed behind ridges and on slopes. They're hidden. They're hidden from view. The PGA setup staff wanted players to play from certain positions, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of wedges into these greens, but a lot of players hitting them to 25 feet.
You said 6 paces. It's funny because you don't start getting dicey on the PGA Tour until you get to 3 paces or 4 paces, and you see that on a regular basis. On the PGA Tour, 6 paces is the standard here, because you could be in the middle of the green and be on one of the knobs on these particular greens, and it's difficult. I had the caddy for Alex Smalley sort of show me his yardage book, and he's got X's in places that you don't want to go after. And there are some greens that it's only one big X. Like you're playing to the middle of the green, there's probably a bowl, and you're putting uphill to whichever corner the pin is in. That's simply the way this golf course was designed to be played. And I think this goes to what Rory was trying to talk about earlier in the week, that it's not necessarily a rigid driving test. And I think you're right. We've absolutely seen that, although I've seen probably more poor lies than I would have anticipated. This is all about second shot opportunities. This is all about making sure you give yourself a chance not to 3-putt. We saw, of all people, Matt Fitzpatrick 4-putt today.
Yeah.
And that, if you had told me that a week ago, I'd have said that's not possible. So it has turned into a stern test, and you're absolutely right. I don't think most of us anticipated that.
No, because you do have players who are hitting roughly double the wedges that they typically would during a PGA Tour round, and yet they're not hitting them particularly close to the hole. That tells me that there's a lot of slope, and that tells me that they're playing very cautiously, very conservatively, and very tentatively, because the penalty for a errant approach shot, either short of the pin, leaving yourself over a ridge, or I think in most cases, beyond the hole, then leaving a devilish putt. You see the 3-putt rate, I think it was like 6%, which is like among the highest that we've seen over the past 20 years. Players are really, really skittish about leaving it in the wrong places. And so they're just sort of playing conservatively and playing carefully. And that's why you see at this point, you had the best round of the day was Chris Gauthier up 65. You're not seeing a whole lot of variance in the scoring because the skills are not necessarily differentiating. You don't see players having elite ball striking days. They're all hitting it to the same spot.
Yeah.
And that's why the leaderboard is so bunched. What do we have? 22 players who are separated by 3 shots At this point, it's a very, very crowded leaderboard. It seems like we're waiting for it to take shape. I would be shocked if the scoring is not better on Saturday and they just they loosen the reins a little bit and put some of those hole locations cut in bowls and get some scoring here.
I keep waiting for you to drop the stat that you – I know you're itching to drop. It's 14 okay, of folks, the last 15. It is. It's go on.
14 of the last 15 PGA champions have been inside the top seven at this point in the championship. And so if history is any indication, our winner is going to come from a group of Alex Smalley, Mav McNealy, Hideki Matsuyama, Chris Goddrup, Aldrich Potgieter, Stefan Jaeger, Minwoo Lee, or Max Grazerman. Your winner is among that group, if history is any indication. However, I did mention it was 14 of the last 15. What are you thinking, Rex? Do you believe that group is going to produce the champion?
Because you look at the group that's right behind them, one stroke back, tied for 90.
I don't make the stats. I just recite them.
It's Cameron Young. It's Scottie Scheffler. It's Harris English. It's Justin Thomas. It's just these amazing players are right behind him, and I just don't see it turning into that. To your previous point, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's going to – the temperature is going to warm up. It's going to be in the 80s over the course of the weekend. The winds aren't going to be quite as strong. And to be quite frank, I think Kerry Hagan, his staff of magicians, have run out of places to hide pins. Like, I don't know there's that many more places to hide pins. So I would anticipate us seeing more low scores. And I would anticipate, to your previous point as well, the idea that someone's going to break free. Someone's going to have the type of ball striking round with their approach play that's going to be able to separate them from the pack.
Yeah, what was Chris Goddrup's score? So he shot 65 on day two, and that the average score is about 72.5. Mm-hmm. And so I mean that was a phenomenal round of golf.
Well, early in the round it was more than 73. It was 73.2 earlier in the day when the winds were blowing.
I mean, it's hard to overstate how difficult the conditions were when Chris Goddrup started his round, when Scottie Scheffler started his round, as well as some of the other big name players. I mean, it was cold. You had guys with ski caps on. It was blowing 20, 25 mile an hour gusts, which again, when the margin for error is so small because of all the humps, the mounds, and the ridges in these green complexes, it just makes for very, very difficult scoring. Chris Goddrup got hot on his closing stretch. He seems to me, Rex, like we saw him obviously pop up last year, stared down Rory McIlroy to win the Scottish, played exceptionally well. So he said it was some of the best golf he's ever played at the Open Championship, and it still was only good enough to finish third. Not surprised at all to see Chris Goddrup, already a two-time winner this season, poke his head up and challenge for this title as well.
I threw you for a loop. I asked earlier in the day that if Chris Goddrup were to win this week, and we have a lot of golf to play, but if he were to win this week, a major championship on top of everything else he's accomplished this season, would he be your player of the year? And I think it took you a second to get there, but he would be. And like, look, we can sit and break this down. I think Cameron Young has had a fabulous year right now in my mind.
He would be my pick right now, even though Matt Fitzpatrick has more titles. 3-2, Cameron Young's body of work is a little bit better.
But, I mean, I don't think you can look past what Chris Goddrup has done if he's able to get it done this week. And you have to like the way he's playing this golf course. It's not as though he's putting lights out. It's not as though he's driving the ball perfect. He's doing everything well. I mean, that's the key. It's not like he's leaning on one part of his game. Because if you go down the leaderboard statistically, I think you'll see a couple of players are having just out-of-body experiences when it comes to on the greens. They're making long
putts. But I will say, historically, when you see at this tournament, that is what's happened.
Sure.
The winners of golf tournaments on this golf course get really hot. Because, again, to our point, what happened yesterday with Scottie Scheffler? He shot 67. He held, 125 feet worth of putts? What happened with Chris Goddrup in the second round? Shot 65, the best round of the day. What did he do? Hold about 120 feet worth of putts. You are going to have players just like JJ Spaun last year at Oakmont who just get insanely hot with the putter, and that's going to carry them. It's a major championship. It can certainly happen. And I think with a bunch leaderboard, whoever's going to get hot.
I also want to say that we talk a lot about the PGA Championship being played this type of year. I think on the Wednesday podcast, we actually addressed the situation that with the changes to the PGA Tour schedule, would they possibly consider moving it back to August? This is a perfect example of why I think the PGA of America, Kerry Hague, the new CEO, would probably all argue we don't want to move it back to August. We like it. This is an absolute perfect scenario where you have cool winds in the Northeast on a classic golf course, and it shows its teeth.
I couldn't agree more. I was talking with our friend ESPN's Paolo Uggetti about this earlier today. The people who are vouching for this tournament and stumping for this tournament to go back to August, I don't think they ever covered a major championship when it was
Tulsa.
Back in August. It was hot. It was steamy. There was weather delays. It just seemed like all of those venues played very similarly with the scoring so great. I love the the differentiation. I love the variance that we typically see. If the setup was a little bit different this week, the variance in scoring, just because the conditions, you're going to have 50 degree mornings, and by the time we get to Sunday, we're going to have nearly 90 degree afternoons as well. I love the sort of variability that you get with this championship this time of year, and I also think the rhythm and the cadence makes a lot of sense as well. Let's talk about some of the other contenders. We actually saw Cameron Young shot a 67, vaulted all the way up to tie for ninth. You do see John Rahm hanging in there as well, shot even par 70. How about Rory McIlroy? Was on the cut line to begin the day, ended up shooting a bogey-free 67, now just sits five shots back, even though he has 28 players who are sitting ahead of him at this point. What else has stood out to you about the players who are, I would call them within striking distance, but again, with so many players who are lumped ahead of them, you're really going to have to do something special to separate.
Is poop more offensive than the word you didn't use yesterday?
Apparently poop was more offensive to our friend Tom Dallas. Thank you, as always, for commenting on our videos.
I think it's an interesting point there. It might be more offensive because you're actually describing the act. You're not describing the outcome, I think would be the way you put it. Absolutely. Yesterday, you were there. Absolutely.
Absolutely. During this podcast, almost.
Rory is a fascinating case study here because we focused on his driving yesterday, which was so poor. And I think that's what had him so aggravated. I actually had to go back and look. Interesting, he did not drive the ball well at Augusta when he won. However, he's first on the PGA Tour this season in strokes gained off the tee.
Yeah, because that skews towards distance, and Rory is...
It is what it is. Like, you can't skip past the stat. Like, I know you're going to sit here and try to gloss over it. He has played
when you're accurate on certain rounds while hitting at 340, those numbers absolutely skyrocket. I would still say Scottie Scheffler is the best driver of the golf ball over the past 4 years in the PGA Tour. Not Rory.
4 years, but again, I'm talking about this season. I think the point you made last night was he hasn't driven the ball well all season. Well, yeah, he has. I mean, it's statistically... You can prove it. I know he's aggravated because he didn't particularly drive the ball well at Augusta. This week, he didn't particularly drive the ball well. I think the difference today was he made some putts, gave himself some opportunities, and he didn't seem to get quite as unfortunate from the rough. It seemed like on day one, every single time he hit in the rough, he had a terrible lot. He had no choice. He was never going to be able to keep it on the green. Today, it looks like he got a couple more breaks, made some putts, and we can sit and go back to the stat that you have to be inside the top seven. I'm not buying it because I think there's probably 25 or 30 players right now who could contend.
Yeah, I think it was a very important day for Cameron Young, obviously buoyed by the Eagle 3 that he made on the par 5 ninth. I think this was sort of the bad, quote-unquote, bad round for Scottie Scheffler. You look at what he did to begin the round, again, in the most difficult conditions. Missed his first six fairways, the first time he's ever done that in his career to begin a round. That was one day after Scottie Scheffler hit 13 of 14 fairways in the opening round here of 67. The lone fairway that he missed in the opening round, he ended up making a birdie on the par five as well. To me, Scottie Scheffler was a little bit sloppy on the greens. Again, difficult putting with some of those pins on the slopes. Scottie Scheffler positioned just two shots back. Has to like his position as well. I've been very impressed with the play of John Rahm. Hit a couple of really squirrely tee shots. Particularly on the back nine, at one point it looked like he got shot and ended up flaring it way right. It's great to see Rombo back in the mix. You and I have been adamant on this podcast that he is so much better than he has shown over the past couple of years, either in LIV or in the major championships. The guy is an absolute primetime player. I would love to see him assert himself over the weekend as well. Let's talk real quick, Rex, about one player who will not be around for the weekend, and that is Bryson DeChambeau, who birdied his last three holes. You and I went both out at the flash area thinking that Big Bryson would talk about what has been a very disappointing two rounds, what has been a very disappointing major championship season so far. It's the first time since 2017 that Bryson DeChambeau has missed the cut in two major championships. It's very odd because he has played exceptionally well on LIV. Back-to-back wins leading into the Masters, missed the cut at Augusta. Finished third last week at LIV Virginia, shot 19 under par, missed the cut by a mile here at Adirondack. What's going on with Bryson?
I think the headline that I saw that was interesting, and this is coming off the John Rahm conversation that we just had. It is cool to see John Rahm back in the mix because I think major championships are better when Rahm is playing in them. And I'm talking about the Rahm who won major championships, the one who contended on a regular basis. But the headline that I saw yesterday was the LIV uncertainty, talking about the public investment fund withdrawing its funding at the end of this year of LIV Golf. The argument was that Bryson was distracted. Well, John Rahm's not distracted. If anything, I would say he's sort of reached an epiphany that, you know what, I'm under contract. Whatever's going to happen.
Situations are markedly different.
I know.
If John Rahm says he's locked in for several years and he, quote, doesn't see many ways out, Bryson DeChambeau.
Bryson has options.
Needs a place to play at the end of the year.
Absolutely. And I don't know if maybe that is a distraction. I think this goes more to the idea that if you were asking me right now who I'm most shocked missed the cut, I went to Tommy Fleetwood when we were having this conversation earlier. I thought Tommy was going to have a great week. This golf course seemed to set up perfectly for him, and yet he missed the cut. I'm more surprised Tommy missed the cut than Bryson, because watching Bryson on the range earlier this week, I was talking with one equipment rep who said he is in meltdown mode. He was clearly searching for something all week long, and it doesn't add up for the reasons that you just pointed out. He's been playing well on LIV, just can't seem to pull that over to the major championships.
Yeah, and look, it obviously, I think, is an indictment of LIV golf setups that are not necessarily pushing these players to the max. What have been the two most grueling, the two most treacherous setups so far this year? They've obviously been at Augusta National for the Masters, and here at Aronimink for the PGA Championship. He can go 19, 20 under par with the best of them, but when you're really having to dial in your approach play, which, again, we talk a lot about the single length irons and whether he's going to be able to, you know, create his own set of 3D printed irons, and you know, is he eventually going to create his own golf ball, whatever the case is going to be. He's not there yet with his approach play. That was obviously evident at the Masters. We missed the cut by
but it was evident last year at the Masters. This is not a new story. This continues to be an issue.
Correct. The difference is his driving has suffered this year as well as his putting. Bryson used to be far and away the most prolific driver of the golf ball, and that really came to a head at the major championships. He's fallen off a little bit in that respect. He's not quite as long as he was. He doesn't quite have quite the same distance gap. I believe he wasn't even close to leading the field in driving distance this week at Aronimink as well. He's just a little bit wayward in that respect, and his touch and his feel on the greens this week in particular were not good. On and around the greens, he was really last in the field. I think he was 153rd strokes gained around the green last I checked, and putted outside of the last three holes very poorly as well. I think he has a lot of soul searching to do, because again, Shinnecock is going to be very, very dicey. We have those treacherous greens. There are going to be a lot of crosswinds that he's going to have to play in as well. The U.S. Open is typically where Bryson DeChambeau shines. It's hard to see him doing so at Shinnecock, barring some sort of major breakthrough with his approach play.
And it's worth pointing out, he didn't talk to the media after round one or round two. He didn't talk to the media.
I would have loved to ask Bryson, are you distracted by the future uncertainty with LIV?
I did not get
an opportunity to do so.
I would have loved to ask Bryson a lot of different questions, and he didn't talk with the media pre-round as well. So I think there's clearly a lot going on in his world, including his game. And I think when it comes to his iron play, which we can go back to last year's Masters, and this has been building for a while, if you look at this objectively, you have to question, is the one-length experiment coming to an end? And my guess is absolutely not, because he seems committed to it. But certainly there has to be something there in the back of his mind that's starting to guess some of these things that he's doing, because he's simply not getting the results.
I mean, he looked great at Pinehurst a couple years ago at the U.S. Open, seemed dialed in there.
Driving the ball, putting. I wouldn't necessarily say his iron play was sublime.
I mean, you really need to be precise with how baked out that golf course was. I think the biggest the facsimile that you had here to Aronimink was Wingfoot, where if everyone is going to be missing fairways, or there really isn't a penalty for missing the fairway, because you don't have that this week with all the trees missing. The recovery shots are a little bit easier. Bryson DeChambeau managed himself that week at Wingfoot exceptionally well, because he was able to judge the distance, hitting wedge shots, able to judge the distance, and where everyone else was either not strong enough, couldn't hit it high enough, whatever the case may be, he was able to pull ahead in that field. He seems miles away from where he was 6 years ago at Wingfoot, miles away, I would say, as well, from where he was 2 years ago at Pinehurst. All right, as we wrap up this mini podcast following the second round of the PGA Championship, what's the one thing you're looking forward to most on Saturday?
If someone can separate themselves.
Yeah.
I enjoy this. I love looking up at a leaderboard and thinking to myself, there are 20 to 30 players that can still win this through 36 holes. I can't imagine we're still having this conversation tomorrow night when we're doing the pod, sitting in these same chairs doing the pod. But if we are, it's going to be pretty shocking, because very rarely do you get this going into the final round of a major championship. It's one thing to see it on a Thursday, maybe even a Friday, but it continues to be bunched. No one can separate themselves.
Yeah, I think that's an indictment of the setup that we've seen at this point. I'm expecting something different. I'm seeing the comments rolling. I do think people are enjoying the setup so far.
I think
if you're a viewer and you're watching this PGA Championship,
I'm going to go walk outside because I'm bored. That's what he said to me earlier today.
Because it is boring, because, again, there is no separator for the skills. And I think if you're a viewer, you like to see the best players in the world who are tested. I think you want to see the best players in the world have to put the ball in the fairway. I think if you want to see the best players in the world have an emphasis on,
you don't think they're tested this play. Week.
I think
the best players in the world are being led at 4 under par.
They're not being tested in the areas that matter most. And the biggest separator for great play is iron play. And if everyone is having to hit it to 25 feet, which has been apparent over these first couple rounds here at Aronimink, the best players are not able to separate. Again, if all of a sudden you put a couple of those in bowls and you're able to make more birdies and good shots are rewarded instead of everyone playing a little bit skittishly, I think you'll have a difference. Again, I think everyone likes to see these par fests. I think they like to see Ryan fest. No one wants to see 15 to 20 under par wins this tournament. I'm hopeful that this setup will be more conducive to skills being the separator as opposed to who can get hot from 25 feet. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As a reminder, we'll have a new edition of the Live From with Rex and Lav newsletter out on Saturday morning. Go to golfchannel.com/Rex and Lav to sign up for the newsletter. Plenty of great stuff on the setup, Rex's notes, numbers to watch, and the like. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys on Saturday night.
Go Cam.